Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, because that's all we ever talk about, but we're going to talk about it in a little bit different context, which we always try to do. And, there's a quote in the Bible about the pig returns to it the mire, and the dog to his vomit, and of course that doesn't sound real cool, but the pig, what's the pig? The pig is something that just eat. All he was interested in is filling his belly. He just wants to eat and eat and eat and eat. He ruts around in the dirt. Very destructive. If he got into your garden, he would destroy it rather quickly. And he just goes around and he just is like a tank. He can be very destructive of the ground. But he can also rut things up and put down a lot of good pig manure and make things better too, I suppose. So it's all a question of point of view, and you can always take the metaphor too far. But the dog returned to his vomit. Dogs do that. But the purpose of the metaphor, which is like a little mini parable, is to tell you something that is really easy to see, is that history repeats itself. Peter is talking about, being entangled again in the yoke of bondage. And, entangled in the elements of the world. And we see this in several different quotes in the New Testament, that they're foretelling that we would do this again, that we would get back in this yoke of bondage. Now, Jesus came to set us free from sin, but they're talking about us being brought back into a yoke of bondage. And of course, people look out today, and I could talk about this in a lot of different perspectives. It's just a question of what you see, and people see, we had all kinds of things in the news recently, and of course, on the different radio stations that I appear on, I'm going to be on another radio station later in this week. As a guest on another program. We're on at least 3 hours a week, as it is now, and we could be on more, but there's only so many hours in a day. But in some of the stations that we're on, they see things like GMOs. They're outlawed in countries all over the world, but they're not outlawing them in America. Of course, there's billions and billions of dollars at stake. They're not improving the amount of food that we produce. They're actually strangling much of the industry of food production. There were a few items that they could produce a lot of, but then because they're also using more insecticides and herbicides mostly, because of this genetically modified organisms, there's changes taking place. Sterility amongst dairy cows has been observed. We've seen in India not only cows, but sheep dying off in large herds because of the fact that it's either the herbicides or the GMO itself is causing digestive problems. And some of this may be seeping over into human diet. But the really dangerous thing is the fact that the seed production and how farms work is disappearing. I mean, there used to be 600 seed cleaners traveling through the Midwest, and they're gone. They're all gone. They've been driven out of business by Monsanto because they copyright their seed, and you can only get seed from them. If something disrupts this, then you can't reproduce the seed. Or of course, now people would be doing it if there was a great disaster. They would be doing it. I mean, like if we've talked about coronal mass ejections or an EMP, both are producing the same kind of electromagnetic pulse that would cause grids to shut down. We've got a nuclear power plant leaking on the West Coast into, I think, the Hudson River. But if you had the grid shut down, you would have nuclear power plants going Fukushima all over, the eastern part of the United States. And, you would have to evacuate large areas, but you'd soon have to evacuate anyway because everybody would be starving, because without the generation of electricity, you soon wouldn't have processing plants, your refrigeration would die, your trucks wouldn't be able to transport goods to the stores would empty out in a matter of days, people would be starving in a matter of weeks. They would be eating each other in the matter of 4 or 5 months. And according to estimates from government studies as well as independent studies, within 1 year, if you had an overall blackout across the entire United States, you would have, you know, by the end of 1 year, you could have as much as 90% of the population dead. That's how severe things could change so rapidly. Now, you might not have that kind of bad blackout. You maybe have just maybe the East Coast or something like that. And then, you know, they could start getting the grid back up. But it might take 6 months. It did in Quebec, and some places in Quebec, they didn't get power up for 6 months after they had a coronal mass ejection from the sun hit the earth. And so those kinds of possibilities are there in your society that would make you extremely vulnerable. And the idea of looking to the government to come in and save you is absolutely insane. But the tremendously efficient agricultural system set up in the United States by the people, for the people, is just absolutely phenomenal. How much we can produce here in America, but we are absolutely dependent upon electricity and the flow of petroleum in order to do that. We have no infrastructure to produce food if something were to interrupt that highly technical machinery of society that produces the food that we now consume in our grocery stores so conveniently. It's just amazing. Now, there are some states that are preparing for this kind of thing, like Maine, but that's not a big food producer. So undoubtedly, even a small event like this could cause tremendous repercussions that would be felt for decades and decades. And maybe everybody wouldn't starve because it would be very localized, but everybody will suffer. Economies will shift, prices of, you know, just a 10% shortage of food could cause a 30 or 40% rise in the cost of food, double the cost of food, 100%, 200%, 300%. It just depends on the level of disaster. And so should everybody go out and buy a bunch of canned beans or dried beans and or sacks of grain and everything? Well, it's not necessarily a bad idea to have those things stored in your garage or down in your basement. And I was just watching something somebody else sent me about somebody, you know, he's trying to figure out ways that you become less dependent upon the system, and talk about growing food and learning to grow food. And that's all great, great pastime, great hobby, great idea, can lower your food budget, and it can lend to making you a little bit more self-sufficient. It can teach you things that if it used to be just common knowledge amongst the people, but is gone now. If you had a third world country that were to lose power, they could have, like Europe and all that, they could have a tremendous difficulty. I mean, they'd be eating each other again. If you had a shift in the climate, a severe shift in the climate, you could have those kinds of things happen also. But in a lot of sections of Europe, they still have a great deal of domestic agriculture. They are not quite as dependent. They are very dependent in Europe, less so in some of the third world countries, but they're not quite as dependent upon, you know, massive machinery plowing up thousands of acres and harvesting them. And, you know, I mean, you couldn't even run your combines and your that go out there and harvest. You'd be out there in the field shucking corn if you even got a crop. The problem is that interruption for a period of time and the readjustment period could be absolutely devastating to society. And then if it didn't happen worldwide, it could make America vulnerable to invasion and what have you. And, you know, we just live in a very precarious society. Very, you know, the bigger we are, the harder we fall. That's not really, we could return to that primitive state really fast, but really our greatest weakness, besides the fact that we can hardly produce food without all this technology, is the fact that we can't even maintain order in our own society without a police state. I mean, you look at Ferguson and some of these other places where they've had riots, or go look at sections of Detroit and Baltimore, and, you know, it takes a huge police force to even maintain some kind of order, and just little things can suddenly set people off and the streets become almost uninhabitable. And as long as that's on a local level, like one town or so, okay. They can kind of ride it out, and they can bring in more forces, they can rotate in cops. But you got places like with the influx of immigrants in Europe, where the towns are just, I mean, they're really going through a lot more than most people realize. And the people are living in fear a lot more than most people realize. We just don't get those stories. You know, I watched a couple stories last night as I was working, played them on YouTube after midnight so that I could, you know, just hear some of the things going on. And I was noticing that a lot of the stories that were just unbelievable, you know, Muslim convert sympathizing with jihadists, and etc., has been made the head of the CIA. And there's a lot more of the, and I'm not picking on all Muslims, but the ones that are sympathetic to some of these groups that are committing, you know, murder and mayhem. It's just not healthy. It is not. Why is that happening now? Why are these? But the point was, is that this isn't happening right now. It actually happened years ago. He's been there in place for a long time. Nobody's even really asked them the question. There were other reporters who were uncovering huge stories and suddenly appeared to have been assassinated in America. Now, we know they kill reporters occasionally in places like Turkey and Iran and even the Soviet Union. But you didn't think they were doing that here in America. But evidently, they are. There's billions of dollars at stake. There's huge amounts of power at stake. And there are ruthless, unscrupulous people gaining greater and greater influence and positions of power. And the reason why is because we created those positions of power, because we've been slothful in the ways of Christ, and we have actually rejected God when we go to church, but we are rejected what God said to do, what Christ said to do, what Abraham, Moses said to do. We've rejected that. We don't admit we rejected it. We think we're still, you know, good Jews, good Christians, what have you, or even good Muslims, because they accept Abraham and Moses, but they are not. They are absolutely not. And it's almost always, you know, there's sometimes it's more one way than another, or more one thing than another, but it's almost always, in all these cases, has to do with very specific things that were warned about in the New Testament, certainly warned about in the Old Testament, that we just are oblivious to. We just don't see. We just reject. We don't even look at that. And so what we've been talking about in the last two programs is what people are coming up with so that they don't have to see those fundamental truths that apply to all societies if those societies want to be fruitful, if they want to be successful, if they want to survive calamity. They have to have these characteristics etched in their society, etched in the hearts and the minds of the people of their society. And these are etched in usually as a person grows up in the family, because families are where society is born. That's what produces society. For thousands of years, societies were produced by the family. We didn't come out of test tubes. We came out of the union of a man and woman. And that's how the next generation comes. It comes out of that union. Every society that has a breakdown of the family has collapsed with decay, corruption, or just simply overrun by somebody else. And of course, that's what's happening in Europe. They're being overrun by other societies. The other societies don't have a greater work ethic. They don't have a greater moral ethic. I mean, the ones that we see influxing in, I mean, you know, 1,000 women raped in 8 months in one small, tiny country, by immigrants. And many of those women they're not actually women, but they're children being raped, and they're getting away with it. And nobody's doing really virtually anything about it. And homes are being broken into, and businesses are being robbed. People just walk in, take stuff off the shelf, and walk out, and nobody does anything about it because it's so overwhelming. And they take over whole areas. The police won't even go into certain areas. And it's not stopping. It's increasing and increasing. Crime is up hundreds and hundreds of percent in these areas because they're allowing these people to come in across their borders. And it's actually a plan to cause disruption. But why are they, you know, why did the governments even think they should let these people in? Is because of the low birth rate. There wasn't enough children being born in those communities to man the factories tomorrow to pay for the social welfare systems. In ancient times, your children were your welfare. Your children of the community, of the family, and of course also of the community, were the ones who were going to grow up and run the farm, run the business, learn the skills, the trades necessary for that society. And they would take care of the elderly. This is what it means to honor thy father and thy mother. Honor them what? Take care of them, fatten them, improve their success so that their days be what? Long upon the land. So they live a long time so they don't just die when they're too old to work. The children take care of them. And that's the way we used to do it. And that was our Social Security, our children. They said, oh, well, we don't need that anymore. We got government Social Security, and they will pay us. You don't have money on deposit. There's no zero, zero, absolutely zero money on deposit. All the money you paid in has gone out already. It isn't there. It doesn't exist. And the system is totally bankrupt. It's actually borrowing money in order to provide you with Social Security. And if you don't believe that, go read our articles. Not so secure, Social Security, because we prove this beyond a shadow of a doubt. There's no debate. Absolutely no debate if you want the true facts. The systems are bankrupt. Okay, so they're borrowing money so that they can provide you with these. But somebody's got to pay off these loans that they're borrowing, this money. They're borrowing it against the future. Well, that's going to be your kids. Except you're not having any kids in Germany. You're not having any kids in France, at least not very many. 1.3 birth rate, because people don't need kids. You know, we got these entitlements. So they're bringing them in, and they're bringing them in from other cultures, and they're bringing in other things with those cultures, other ideas, other concepts, other moral values. And they're coming in, and they're not screening it. They're not being careful. They're just marching in by the thousands. You see thousands and thousands of people, not a woman or a family amongst them, all men, military-age men coming in. You know, many of them, actually, if you look there, you'll see many of them with military haircuts even and stuff. So I don't know who all these people are. They're coming across the Mexican border now, not just Mexicans, but these people coming from foreign countries in the Middle East, and they're coming in. And it doesn't take very many people to cause trouble. Like that one lady who, Muslim lady, who, at least Muslim background. I don't know if she's a Muslim religion. Doesn't really matter. Muslim religion is really a political movement. There is a religious aspect to it, but originally it was a political movement of conquest, and with a religious rituals and facts painted over the top, but it's really a political movement. And there's a lot of great Muslims out there in all parts of the world, but there's also in this thing that they call the Muslim religion or Islam, there's a huge factor. It may not even be the majority, but a huge factor that is going to be extremely disruptive, and it doesn't take very much. But that one lady who she would say the silent majority didn't make any difference. It was irrelevant. Because most, you would say that most Germans were good people. But the silent majority, the good majority, they didn't make any difference. It only took a small minority of people to bring about Holocaust and destruction and devastation to a society. And of course, that's what's taking place. So anyway, what we've been talking about is how we return to this mire. And there's this one common thread that we keep finding throughout history, certainly throughout all the countries of the world today. And I've been quoting from a letter that a guy was writing back and forth, and he just doesn't get it. He just does not get it. And I've known the guy for years. Nice guy. Well, he's ornery. He's got a temper on him too, but he's just blind to this very basic fundamental teaching of Jesus Christ. He reads it, read the Bible a bunch of times. He just doesn't see it. And he quotes John Hay. This is one of the last things that I mentioned, where it says, John Hay says that, this is back in 1872, the evil of tyranny are rarely seen by him who res the evil of tyranny are rarely seen but by him who resists evil. So that's a resists it. The problem is what John Hay was saying is the evils of tyranny is the fruit of tyranny. You don't see the power of tyranny until you resist it, and then you feel the oppression, the whip, the bite of tyranny. But that's not really the evil of tyranny. The evil of tyranny is the willingness to be a tyrant, because the willingness to be a tyrant kills the soul. Tyrants can actually make you stronger. Dealing with the tyranny of others can actually bring out courage, industry, brotherhood, all that. These are the best of times, worst of times. But if you become a tyrant, it kills your soul. It strangles your heart and your mind so that you cannot see what is right or wrong. And that's exactly what has happened in America, Australia, Canada, Europe, throughout Europe, is that all these people, these nice people who go to church, or maybe they don't go to church, they just go to the game or whatever, but they're nice people. And they go to the pub, they laugh and joke, tell stories, and they might run out and help you if you got a flat tire. I mean, they're nice people. But they're evil, wicked tyrants. They're workers of iniquity because they want benefits at the expense of their neighbor. That's the thread. You constantly see that covetous thread. That will lead to all kinds of other things, but that desire to have things, have something, some sort of benefit to your society by forcing people to contribute. As soon as you say that's okay, you are guaranteeing your servitude. As soon as you think, you see that happening and you think that's okay, you are doomed. Your society is doomed and you will not be a free people. This is one of the most insidious diseases, this covetousness of benefits. If you will think that way, then what keeps you from becoming a cannibal when there's no food? What makes you human? You become the lord of the flies. You turn to savagery and become a fit savage. Now, a lot of people say, well, that's crazy. Never heard of such a thing, and they think that's actually the case. And it's, that I must be wrong. There's no way that what I'm saying could be actually true. That is what is destroying society. That covetous idea of being okay to take away from your neighbor through government agencies, legally. They impose a tax, and they have a right often to oppose a tax. And people think that that's okay. And I tell you, it destroys society. Now, just to show you how old this is, of course, I can show it to you in the Bible, and I can show it to you in Proverbs. I can show it to you in the Psalms. I can show it to you in the Ten Commandments. But let's look at somebody outside the Bible. And his name was Polybius. The masses continue with an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them by way of a rule of force. And it says and violence, but that's part of the translation. But that this authority, this exercising authority. The people, having grown accustomed to feed at the expense of others and to depend for their livelihood on the property of others, they institute a rule of violence or force. And now, uniting their forces, massacre, banish, plunder, until they degenerate again into perfect savages and find once more a master and a monarch. Now, Polybius, he lived, 200 years before Christ. Rome was still a republic at that time. It was in the process of decay, but it had been a republic for 500 years. But it was disappearing away. And you could look at speeches of, Samuel and 1 Samuel 8. And then later on when Samuel is telling Saul he was foolish because he actually forced a sacrifice of the people. That sacrifice was to support his troops. In other words, he imposed a tax. There had been no taxes in Israel, a successful nation, for hundreds of years. And now all of a sudden, Saul was the first one to impose a tax of any consequence. There was a little half dime tax that you paid in once a year. But other than that, there was no taxes. There was tithing. You tithe to your minister according to service, but everything was free will offerings. You chose what you gave. The Levites weren't kicking anybody's door. It was a different kind of society. It produced a different kind of family, different kind of generation after generation. We don't do that anymore. Israel doesn't do that anymore. Israel, the Zionist Israel over there in the Middle East, doesn't do that anymore. America used to do that, doesn't do that anymore. It does what Polybius is talking about. And this is destroying this nation and all the nations throughout the whole world. So we know that this devastation is coming. Even in truth, amazingly enough, it may be that this coronal mass ejection from the sun that may suddenly destroy society, because of the fact that it destroys the infrastructure, overnight, in a matter of minutes. It could be done with, an EMP as well. But it could be that actually saves the few that will be left, because they may be doing something else to bring us down. You know, I mean, who knows what it is? I mean, we've seen events that could cause this, but you know, the system keeps chugging along and making it work. Now, yeah, millions of people have died in different places. Millions of people have died in Iraq and all that kind of stuff. But what exactly is going to happen? I'm not going to say. I'm not going to tell anybody. And it doesn't really matter if I could tell you exactly. But you know it's coming. You know there's no going back. But we're going to go to a break here. And then we're going to show you where the solution is. I've actually seen a number of things lately that would show us where that solution is just in the last few days. But it's something we are trying to teach people. We are looking for more and more people to learn these ways. And it's what saved people during the fall of Rome. And some people just are not going to see it. They're just not going to get it. Some people are going to see it a little bit and they'll start in that direction. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back after this brief break. We'll be right back. So anyway, I kind of painted a bleaker picture in the first part of this show than probably I needed to. Now, let's take a look at what the way things could have been if we didn't take a turn down towards the dark side, which has ever been controlling our destiny. and that's, you know, I was out here working on a ranch that's way out beyond where the power runs. The power doesn't go everywhere out here. We're way out in pretty much the wilderness. And there are a lot of people who live beyond where the power poles go because it's just so much distance out here. And the phones don't go out there, although now with cell phones and everything, they actually do have cell phones, but they still generate their own power because there's no power that gets here. And but years ago, there used to be giant Pelton wheels, cast iron Pelton wheels, and huge GE rheostats because people were putting in hydroelectric off the springs that come out of the mountains. And those used to exist all throughout the Midwest and different places. And they had windmills, not like the old windmills, but I mean, big turbine windmills. I mean, fairly good size, about the size of a plane engine. And they were generating power out on the desert here. But then when they came in with rural electrification, that technology just died. Now, you know, back in the 20s and the 30s, that technology was developing. Now with solid state, we would be really well developed in this process of generating local power. But we got away from that because the government came in and began to subsidize power. And they also subsidized education, and they subsidized medical. And it's just, we just gone more and more and more that way. We've got some stories back in the 1800s where people suggested that the government could pay for, you know, injuries and fire damage and help out people who were, you know, suddenly destituted when there was huge fires. And people in America objected to that. They said the government shouldn't do that. We can do that. We can do it ourselves. And politicians even saw that and they backed away from that. And they spoke out that that's not, the government's job is not the charitable works of society. That has to remain in the hands of the people. Which is why we have Lady Godiva on the front cover of the Free Church Report. Fully clothed because she didn't ever take off her clothes and ride through the streets. She took off her wealth because she saw the idea of taxing the people to take care of the welfare of the people, you know, hospitals, schools, you know, orphans, all that stuff. To do that with tax money would destroy society. She knew that. She preached that. She taught that. And she put her money where her mouth is. And she was considered a saint, and her husband was considered a saint. But somebody, years and years after they had both passed away, came up with this ridiculous ride through the town naked story. And because there has been a church for the last 1,000 years, church people or elements in the church or whatever you want to call it, that want you to think that it's okay for the government to tax your neighbor to provide you with benefits. And of course, at first, they wanted to get those benefits. They wanted to receive that tax money. Elements in the churches of the day wanted to receive that money. And so they covered up what the real issue was with Lady Godiva, who was one of the richest people in Great Britain, as the only woman mentioned in the Doomsday Books, which is the tax books of William the Conqueror when he came to England. But anyway, long story. The point is, you destroy a society when it no longer takes care of the people of society through charity, through free will offerings, which is the way Moses said to do it, Abraham said to do it, John the Baptist said to do it, Christ said to do it, Paul said to do it, Peter said to do it. But the modern Christian and the modern Jew thinks it's okay to have the government do it, even though Jesus said specifically not to. So this is destroying. It's making society impotent. It's making the word of God impotent to none effect by these systems. So the first thing you have to do is see that that is a problem. Now, one of the things you can see when somebody will not see that, just cannot see that that's why you've been made merchandise, that's why you've been entangled, that's why you become a surety for debt, is this covetousness. They will scream fraud. You'll hear them say fraud, deception, it's the liberals' fault, it's the Republicans' fault. I know people that are not far from the kingdom and are voting for Bernie Sanders. I know people that are not far from the kingdom and they're going to vote for Trump. That's because there's something blocking in their thinking. Either one is not the answer. There is no political candidate on the horizon who can change this. You have to change. So I was talking about all these power plants on these local farms and stuff like that in small rural communities. And now we have people that are actually going back and reactivating some of those power plants on some of the, and people are putting in solar and people are putting up wind generators because they want to have some power. That's great. That's fine. Learn that technology. It's not the ultimate solution, but you can see this kind of pattern of looking for this independence. They're homeschooling their kids. They're starting businesses where they don't have to depend upon major corporations. But the fact is, everything is so intertwined and entangled, there's no way you can completely escape that dependency. If you lived in Ferguson and you had put solar panels all over your roof and you had stocked up and you put gardens in your backyard where you could produce all the food that you needed and they rioted, they would find you. They would take everything you have and probably murder and rape your family and then burn it down. There's because you're all alone. Because one of the major things that we haven't developed we've lost in society today is the brotherhood, the union and discipline, they called it in the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, amongst the Christians, where they had formed these networks of tens, hundreds, and thousands. So no matter how bad it got in one city, if it really got so bad that you just had to leave the city, you could go to another city, another town, another village, and you were networked together and you knew where to go and who to contact. And you would find and survive. Every other institution, every other group was falling apart and failing because they didn't care about one another as much as they cared about themselves. They didn't have this. They couldn't see this basic fundamental thread in society. People who say that, you know, that our present bondage is a result of fraud, and all you have to do is fill out this paper, UCC or whatever, or get rid of your driver's license and get rid of your birth certificate and all these kinds of things. When anybody's talking in those terms, you know they don't get it. They don't really see the spiritual power, the power of virtue that makes a society strong. Because those things are just symptoms. You know, like you get sick and the doctor wants to treat symptoms. He doesn't want to cure you. He just wants to treat the symptoms, make you comfortable with it. So they come up with all these crazy plans of, you know, how to get out of the system. And it doesn't do anything. At least this one guy, and I won't mention his name because I haven't listened to the whole video. He's talking about, and he was just getting into the idea of community. And of course, that's what you could be doing. Is start finding out who you can trust, finding out who you can work with. But not just in your local community in Detroit or Baltimore or Houston or Poughkeepsie or wherever you're at, but a national and international community that is focused on loving their neighbor as themselves. The Israelites in Egypt not only prepared for the plagues that were coming, they, and to the point where when the hail plague came, it didn't even land in their community. Miraculously, the winds came up or something, and it didn't seem to land in their community. Now, they had many of the other plagues, the water problems and all that kind of stuff, but they had already learned what they needed to learn to avoid that. That's one of the things that will be the great killer in the future, because about 20 minutes after the power goes out, certainly within a few days after the power goes out, sewage will be dumping in every major river in the United States. And disease, diuretic disease, dysentery, typhoid, all these things will be rampant in society. And if you're already starving and weak because of the difficulties, and then you get chronic diarrhea on top of that, you're dead. You're just not going to make it. So how do you purify water? We can teach you that. We can show you that. I mean, you can find it out now. You can Google it. That's still fairly easy to do. You can actually go out and buy a Berkey water filter or you know, just even the filters themselves and make it yourself with a 5-gallon bucket. And those skills are great. But the ultimate skill is how to be brothers. How to be a community. How to help one another work. You know, I've seen over and over again, or I've seen people try to form partnerships and they end up falling up out of partnership and they're mad at each other and now they never talk to each other. Even families are divided up because they're in a business and then they can't stand each other anymore. They can't talk to each other. But if we have this common thread, I showed you the common thread of coveting your neighbor's goods, blaming everything on fraud. You know, somebody else's fraud, the liberals, the Democrats, the socialists, or whatever. It's all their fault, or they got us into this war, the Republicans got us into this war, and, you know, weapons of mass destruction that weren't really there. And you can blame everything on somebody else. But the reality is, the fact that we wanted benefits. You know, we wanted to plug in to rural electrification. It was so much cheaper. It was tax money that provided it and brought the power at that low, low price, which meant that somebody was forcing your neighbor to pay the price through taxation. But you were getting electricity for this cheap rate, and it was coming in, and you thought, great, and you were borrowing money against the future. And some of that could have gone on, but you made a habit out of it. It set a direction in society. Your electricity was going to come by way of this. Your food subsidies were going to come. Now, the number of major corporations that are subsidized, banks subsidized, schools subsidized federally, Of course, locally, the taxes, you know, taxing your neighbor allows you to have these schools, police departments, ambulance services. You don't pay for them yourself. I mean, the first fire departments in Boston, back there in the days of Benjamin Franklin, were paid by all voluntary funding. That's the way they set it up. Now, eventually, they want to get it on the tax rolls. But as soon as you want to get it on the tax rolls, you've changed the whole spirit. That you're now using force rather than love. So now let's telegraph this out. What would this look like now? Because, you know, we've got all these guys that I've written the books on the subject. I mean, decades and decades ago. I mean, yeah, probably half a century ago, I was explaining this. And I can show you books that go back to millennium. You know, or at least writings that go back to millennium, warning you about, you know, this whole idea of birth certificates and making the state your father. I mean, Jesus said it, call no man father, because it makes you dependent. The system that Jesus was preaching, the system that Moses was preaching, that the Pharisees had gotten away from and the modern Christians have gotten away from, they're not doing what Christ said, would make it so that you would need those things. That you would help one another, you would bring in power, you would fix roads, it would be an all-voluntary society. But you've gotten away from that because you wanted to be a little tyrant. You wanted to take a bite out of your neighbor. It was easy for you to do. You didn't have to actually use your teeth. You used the teeth of the government. You looked to them to solve your problem. And now they're taking and taking and taking and taking and taking, all of which was prophesied by Plutarch, by Benjamin Franklin, by Samuel, by Proverbs. It tells you that this is what's going to happen. And you went that way anyway. And your fathers went that way. And your grandfathers went that way. Because this is a long time coming. But everything's going to fall quickly. Your liberty has nothing to do with birth certificates. Excuse me. Nothing to do with birth certificates, nothing to do with driver's license, nothing to do with the Federal Reserve. Those things are all symptoms of the problem. The problem is that you're covetous and selfish and slothful. That's the problem. If you weren't those things, and you're a little ignorant, you lack knowledge, okay? But you should have sensed this. You should have been aware of it. But you had already turned yourself away from God in your pride. You see, pride is another one of those things. Of course, you're not proud. It's always the other guy that's proud. The reality is it was the rejection of God that the Israelites were doing that caused them to want to have a king, a ruler who could exercise authority. Because most Americans did not want to have a president. Most Americans were against the Constitution. You know, everybody wasn't turning out to vote for a president of the United States. Because a lot of them didn't think we should even have one. And it really didn't have anything to do, because they were all citizens of the individual states. And the states, even after the ratification of the Constitution, were as foreign to each other as Mexico is to Canada. And I'm quoting right out of, you know, James Truslow, and the one quote came from Clark's summary of U.S. American law, that the states were still countries even after the Constitution of the United States. That's not the case anymore, but that's the way it was originally. But things have changed. So how do we get back? How do we get back? How do we start making preparations? Well, yeah, we could learn to grow a garden in our apartment, and we could learn to grow a garden in our backyard. But really what you really need to cultivate is the brotherhood of a free society. And that only you're only going to draw near that. You're going to draw near the understanding of that by sacrifice, daily sacrifice, a daily ministration. And it's a huge job, and you can't do it all at once. So you go ahead and take your baby steps, your small steps. But Do not forsake the gathering together, we're told. And that's what you have to do, is you have to gather together. Not 15,000 people in a single church and everybody go there and sit for an hour and a half and sing songs. No, you gather together in tens, 10 families. And you say, we're going to learn what it means to start caring about other people as much as we care about ourselves. In that congregation, it could be very easy to care about each other. But how do you care about other people that you don't even know as much as you care about yourself? Because that's what you have to do. So now, when you first start gathering together, you're going to have people that come with goofy ideas like it's all the result of fraud. Or, you know, if we just rescind these documents, then suddenly we will magically become free. No, it will only come about if you change your thinking and begin to realize that it's not okay to ask men who exercise authority to take from my neighbor. So, you know, you may have a local fire department that's set up. You know, we have a volunteer fire department, but you may have a local fire department. But when you go out and buy fire extinguishers, go out and buy enough to put out a fire at your neighbor's house. Get together with your neighbors and start talking about a fire watch. You know, I mean, that you, what it basically is that if there's a fire, we just had a town, the closest town to us, which I guess about the closest, is, which is 40 miles away. They just had a house burned down. The guy was asleep in the house. Somebody spotted it going out to check cows, and he ran over there and he banged on the door and he woke the guy up. I mean, the place was ablaze. But it was started up above in the upper stories, and they got him out. He came out in his pajamas, bare shirt. And people came over and helped, and but you know, the house is pretty much ruined. Old house. But they all came to each other's aid. And I'm sure that guys are thinking, what else could we do? I saw they've got these little red balls now that you can throw into a fire, truck fire or fire in a house, and you throw it in and it catches on fire and it blows up. It explodes. Evidently, you can actually hold it in your hand while it explodes, although it's not advisable. But so it's not going to do any harm to you. But and it just puts the fires out. I don't know what's in it, but it's a clever little device. I don't know how well they keep, but one of the big problems with fire extinguishers is that they lose their charge. But you, as a community, start doing things like putting those things together. Start getting hoses, big hoses, there you can hook up water. Start getting first aid kits. Start get somebody to help put on first aid classes in your community. What to do in emergency situations. Take EMT training. But you gather together in a network of people. Now, everybody's not going to get this. Everybody's not going to think in this way. So you have to look a long ways to find people that think in this way. And that's what we do here at HHC, His Holy Church, is we're trying to find people who think about what it means to be a society that cares, where the members of that society, the participants of that society, the free assemblies of that society, can care about their neighbor as much as they care about themselves. They're not survivalists. They want to see society survive as much as they want to survive as well. And so they're going to work in that direction. And then not just going to think doomsday if you go and tell everybody it's going to be doomsday and everything, but just help out. What if there's an earthquake in California or the Midwest, like the New Madras Fault? What if there's a tsunami on the coast? All those things are possible. What if there's a fire in the forest where you live or nearby? What do you do? What if a nuclear power plant, if you're within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant, what happens if it melts down? What if there's a storm and power goes out? What if there's a flood if you're along the Mississippi River or any of these major rivers that flood once in a while? What are you doing for emergency preparedness? That's a good excuse to start finding people who care about one another. What about the people who get sick and injured in your community and they just don't have enough money to get by? Or do you have a network to try to help? Now, we paid out thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in medical bills in our little network alone this last year, helping people out, teaching them how to negotiate, teaching about health, teaching them about how to fix it. I mean, I could just go on. The list is interminable. And the more people we add to the network, each person we add to the network, we can become richer and richer and richer without taking anything from our neighbor, but coming together to give to one another, share with one another. Homeschooling, they're going to be making homeschooling an outlawed pastime. So you have to come together to be strong enough to thwart this. They're going to force vaccinations. They're talking about this. They're talking about getting rid of the $100 bill and going to a cashless society, which merely makes you more vulnerable. What can you do? Do not forsake the gathering together. Get on the network. Form congregations of record. Organize yourselves in free assemblies from the ground up, and then we'll start talking more and more about what you can do, what you can learn, the skills that you can apply. That's what we need to do. And if you don't want to do that, have a nice day. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. Until next time, God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.